First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour and WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, June 11th, 2023. I'm Larry Rhodes, or DJ Doubter 5. And as usual, we have our co-host Wombat on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
Yo, happy Pride.
Happy Pride. And our special guest today is Boudreaux from Kentucky. Welcome.
Hey, guys.
And Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling you're the only non-believer in your town, well, you're just not. Here in Knoxville, in the middle of the Bible Belt, we have a group of over 1,000 of us. We're the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK, and we'll tell you more about us after the mid-show break. Be sure to stick around. Wombat, what's our topic today?
We're catching up with our friend Boudreaux, who's gone on a really cool trip, and then also talking about biblical diets. How to stay lean and have good cuisine in an age where, you know, everyone's constantly thinking about their body proportions. Why don't they just do what the Bible tells them with regard to what the best way to look is? Boudreaux, good to see you, though. I haven't seen you in a while, but I've seen your pics, and I've seen that you've been busy. Why don't you catch us up?
Yeah. Hey, guys. We went on a fun trip, a vacation with a really big family. There were 13 of us.
Wow.
My wife and kids, her dad and her mom, and then her two sisters and their families. There are a lot of people.
It didn't turn out like family vacation movies.
Right. And actually it was pretty uneventful in terms of mishaps, which usually somebody loses luggage or
a kid.
Yeah.
Or a kid.
One kid.
I don't understand, Steven. It's like, oh, that's rough. That's rough. Yeah. So where'd you go this time?
So we flew into Mexico City, but then quickly flew down south to Chiapas, a region near Guatemala, and did some adventuring around there. We did actually get to step foot in Guatemala, which was really neat. No passports or anything like that. And then I hope the border control's not listening. and then we got to see some Mayan ruins, back to Mexico City for a few days. But we got to see waterfalls, canyons. I mean, I'll post it all on Facebook, but, there were two kind of interesting religious, things that happened that we can explore more here or, just
sure. 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 I want to hear about it. I want to hear about it. I have some thoughts about this too.
So George, one of has joined the show before, commented to the group about how we were looking at the Mayan cross. Obviously the Mayan religion was pretty big in this Chiapas region that didn't take the Catholicism kind of influx that was coming in, and they stayed with their kind of Mayan traditions. But they had a cross, and it looks eerily similar to the cross from overseas. And George's comment was, why is that? As a scientist, he's like, why are those so similar? And the religious response is, maybe that's divinely inspired, right? It's the symbol that was given to both of these groups, which I find kind of silly in the sense that they're both talking about two very different gods, right? Some religions don't think of one single God. So I don't know, a reaction from you guys. Is it divinely inspired or is there some other reason?
It's obviously divinely inspired. What's the conversation?
End of, let's just hang up the call. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember there was a really cool sermon that I saw. When I say cool, I mean just like, fascinating, where they're talking about a particular protein. Proteins are these things in your body that have a very particular shape that do very specific functions. And your body produces them out of like a long chain of amino acids, and they eventually fold to a very particular structure that's used for a bunch of different stuff. If you change the order of the amino acids, you change the eventual structure of how that protein folds. And there's one protein that is responsible for some vital life functions in your body. And the thing is, the protein is a fairly, I mean, while it does fold into a particular shape, it can be mixed around. It's not like a rigid structure, but sometimes it looks like this. And when I do this, I'm doing a cross shape, and it looks like this sometimes.
Yeah.
And so the sermon was like, there's a protein in your body. I talked to scientists. I talked to biochemists. I talked to philosophers around the world. And they said, prove to me there's a God in your protein. Prove to me there's a God in your... It's like, well, you can't live without this protein. Guess what it looks like? Puts it up on the screen.
Yeah.
And the first thing I did was I Googled that same protein. And it's like, yes, sometimes it's like this. Sometimes it's like a ball. Sometimes it looks like a little devil with horns on it. Because these things are flexible.
Sure.
Yeah. So in the event that the times that looks like a cross, do I find that as divine inspiration for how it actually always looks, or is it just a coincidence? And I'm fine with things being coincidences, because coincidences are demonstrable.
Happen all the time.
And they happen all the time. And not only that, but it's a really simple structure. For example, if the cross was a very ornate thing, like what the Jewish star, like something... Yeah. Much more elaborate rather than just two lines with symmetry overlapping each other at right angles. I would then say maybe there's something to it. But otherwise, I see the cross in like the alphabet. I see the cross when I drop a bunch of toothpicks on the ground. Mm-hmm. I see the cross, you know, everywhere. It's just an intersection of two lines. And I can't reprimand a culture for appropriating it. Yeah. With like some sort of copyright infringement when it's just such a basic shape.
Can I also point out this?
I mean, yeah,
like we can the human that. Body.
Yeah, human body is symmetrical. We love bilateral symmetry. It's like the coolest thing ever. If now I would say this, there's like this idea in US copyright culture where you can't copyright the word the, for example, right? You can't put a trademark on a sound effect that's like the Wilhelm scream, or like literally something that's the sound of like a gunshot, and be like, hey, they stole our sound. Your sound clip's only 5 seconds long. You can't copyright that. It's too short. It's not meaningful. In the same way, I think we should have some credence that other people left to their own devices, if they're still humans, it should be indicative of the fact that we came up with the same shapes, because there's just something inherent to human preference for bilateral symmetry and simple designs. And the more
human bilateral symmetry is all through the animal kingdom.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And so I just find that to be the case. Larry, I'm sorry for overstepping this. There's a lot of stuff I can talk about this, but did you have a thought on this?
No, go ahead. You're doing fine. I just, there's hear it.
Bujo, you might know this because you went to Greece and Rome, but like they have coins that you can like look at and say, hey, here are old fashioned coins from this really old period of time. And when you look at them, they're not fancy. They're just like slabs of metal with like some very stamp basic, on it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, stamped engraving. You're like, why aren't these coins fancier? Like how, you know, it is here with our industrialization. It's like they were fancy. These coins used to be super, super ornate. And then they realized it's a pain in the butt to grave each of these coins. It's just Caesar's face, just like kind of like, and then just get it out the door so we can use it as money. The simplicity of the design took over, and it showed that the hallmark of a lot of designing is simplicity, not complexity. And so, go ahead, Bujo. Bujo's taking a step out. So the main reason is why when I look at a cross, I look at a very simple structure, whether it could be used for crucifixion or for holding some like elaborate stuff that you can like or design ornately, or to put
or working a pedestal, puppet,
right? Or to like build the what do you call them, the hilts for a sword. Like it's a very uniform structure with a very simple design when you just have like a long line and like a flat parallel or perpendicular line to it. It's a very complementary structure for a lot of things because it's inherently simple and it's fundamentally applies to a lot of different stuff.
Right.
So I'm not surprised that I see it from other cultures is my main takeaway. But is it divinely inspired? Who knows? Because I can't prove that divinely inspired things even exist in the first place, but I'm not going to entertain the thought until I have a good reason to believe that such a thing exists in the first place too.
Go ahead. So if every religion, or at least a vast majority of all religions, all had that simple symbol.
Yeah.
That would make me scratch my head a little bit more.
I mean, my head a little bit more.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Again, it could be an incredible coincidence. But then I'd be like, you know,
I mean, on the subject of scratching my head more, if it was more complex in its design, absolutely. And if everybody did it, then yes, absolutely. But when we're in the situation where we are now, where a lot of popular religions don't have stuff like that, and it's a very, very simple structure, like a one-year-old could draw it. Like, I remember, you know, anyone could like just do this, right? Like, you play tic-tac-toe, you can draw a cross, right?
We're also cherry picking too. Why are we looking at the Mayan religion and Catholicism or coming out of Jerusalem? Why are we cherry picking those?
Sure.
And asking, oh, these are so similar, instead of asking,
The Buddhists. I looked up the cross itself is not just a Christian cross. As a matter of fact, a plain cross is called a Latin cross. And if you look it up, it's a derivative of daggers or obelisks used to indicate death. The cross originated as a pagan symbol in Asia and Africa countries, and then it was a platform for crucifixion in Rome.
Right.
So it had a much more ancient source or origination.
I think we're overlooking the more important question, though, where it's how is it that we have a culture that has the ability to make all these beautiful monuments that still stand today. Like, there's more stuff standing in Mayan culture than there is from ancient Christian times. Like, you go to Jerusalem, all that stuff's been leveled out, you know, like it's people still there. But if you go to Mayan culture, like, they still have the temples, they still have the weird sports ball circles up in the air. Like, you can still play that game there. Like, all you just need is a fresh bladder. It's like, the monuments they built last so much longer. Why weren't any of them built in the scope of Christianity? Like, why weren't they? Why does this ancient culture that was capable of so much build at least one thing that coincides with the narrative that's presented to us by Christianity? That would at least be a more powerful tool. Not so much the idea of a cross, but like, if they built a giant Jesus statue or like a Noah's Ark instead of one that you have to go to Kentucky to go see, right? Or if they built something that was just like, hey, by the way, this about a flood, or something that's like narrative consistent with the Bible or any other religion that's, you know, popular right now. It doesn't even have to even be specific to Christianity. I just want some congruity between all these different ancient temples, shrines, monuments, and the story that we're told, because it's all pointing in different directions. What do you think, Pedro?
I love that, because one of the other examples I was going to bring up, and you surely both of you have seen a meme floating around where it talks about the Egyptian pyramids and the Mayan pyramids, and they talk about how, hey, here's another data point, sample size of two, but these two cultures built these structures.
Right.
And they're so similar. Mm. And it's like divine inspiration, you know.
Sure.
And the engineer in me is thinking roughly what the meme was saying is, this is a great way to stack blocks.
Yes.
So they don't fall down for a really, really long time. All of the structures.
It's a basic shape.
Wide base, a short top. Yeah. That's basically it.
And it lasts so long. All the structures that were uniquely different and weird and not the same fell down, crumbled.
Right. Yeah. Look at Stonehenge. Yeah. Like, look at Stonehenge right now. Like, that thing is halfway standing up. Like, you look at that, you look at Stonehenge and you compare it to like a pyramid or like a Mayan temple. You're like, you guys aren't even, this is just a couple of rocks. It's like, it looked way cooler back then. It's like, but it's all falling apart. Like, we didn't have the good engineers to tell us wide at the bottom, small at the top. We didn't figure out that yet. It's like, okay, well, you know, so other people did. What do you think, Larry?
No, that's fine. I wanted to get back to this divine inspiration idea. Sure. I say we can't, you know, we don't believe that divine inspiration actually happens because there's no divine. I mean, there's no God. But there are a lot of artworks that are inspired by the idea of the divine. And there's a distinction to be drawn there so that people understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. And with regard to the artwork, there's a really funny thing that you should really check out, which is, what does Jesus look like in other countries, right? Because if you go to, and I had the benefit of growing up in California, so like I would go to, and we were like shopping around churches for a lot too. We were Christian back then. Uh-huh. But when you go to like a predominantly white church, Jesus is like blue-eyed. He gives you a Bible where he has like a very basic, I work at Lowe's sort of like hair, facial hair. He's got mm-hmm. like the perfect cropped, like I just got out of Mormon school haircut. I have I don't even have the Bible now, but like it's my first Bible looked like Tim Allen, like Jesus was basically
oh, really?
Tim Allen. Right. And then you went to like the more churches that were more Catholic, more Mexican, and like all of a sudden Jesus isn't like this big bulky lumberjack brownie guy. He's like this long haired, flowing hair, green eyed, six pack app, sort of like very Italian looking dude. Mm-hmm. Like he looks like he's like, my name is Luigi. My name is Pizza. Like I'm not.
There's a reason for that.
It is. It is. And I, in my head, I was just like, I don't really parse these two. They're just both fair skinned people. But it didn't really hit me until I went to a church that was for Black people or mostly Black people. And I saw a Black Jesus on the cross. And that's when my brain started going like, wait a second, that's not Jesus. That guy's from Africa. Wait a second. Black people are from Africa. Hold on a second. Or like, you know, like in my head, I'm starting to think, wait a second. Why does Jesus look Italian? Go to the Catholic churches. Why does Jesus look like a white guy when I go to mostly white churches? And then I looked it up and it turns out there's an Asian Jesus. If you go to like Korea, they don't like try to sell when they proselytize back there. They don't try to sell a white Jesus. They sell like a very vaguely looking Asian Jesus that's also on a cross. And I'm thinking to myself, you can go on Google Images and you can see what just Jesus looks like from another country. The way how art is depicted is sort of a way to reinforce the inherent biases or the beauty standards, if you will, of the people that they're trying to sell it to. Like you can sell something a lot easier if it's familiar to people compared to if it's something entirely brand new, even if the storylines don't make sense. Like, why do these fair-skinned people exist in, like, Persia? Like, makes no sense. And I thought, well, at least we don't do this anywhere else. And it turns out we totally do. Because how many times have we seen a Roman movie or a movie that takes place in ancient Rome where everyone has British accents, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know that's not how they talk back there. I know that's not how they talk back there. But Americans associate foreign with English, right? Yeah. Or, like, the English accent. And we don't connect the dots until we talk to a person who's from England. And they're like, we live right next to that country. They can't find any Greek actors. It's like, I don't know why you're angry about this. Like, I'm very angry about this. If you talk to people who are from Greece and Rome, like, we don't talk like that. What's going on?
Yeah.
And so there's a video game series called Assassin's Creed and Prince of Persia. I don't know if you heard about those. They finally started doing acts. Oh, this is the most infuriating one. They did it's a historical game where you get to be an assassin. You run around and stuff like that. They did a game. Assassin's Creed is made by a French company. They are in France, and they made a game that was during the French Revolution. Every single person in the game has an English accent. And it made no sense to anybody, but they're like, we're making this for Americans because they don't understand that French people have French accents. I was like, why? We know game made $1 million or game sold millions and millions of copies, but it really blew everyone's mind. They finally fixed it, though, and they made finally the ones in Greek have Greek actors and the ones in Persia have Persian actors. And they finally started doing this crazy radical thing where they changed the skin color of the person to not always just be like a generic white guy if it takes place in like a very ethnic area. So like now the new Prince of Persia is like this brown skinned person and people are like, oh, that's not my Prince of Persia. And I'm like, why are you angry? Because have you not seen Persians? They kind of look like that. It's like, oh, anyway, that's my weird soapbox. But yes, absolutely. People will modify art to be propaganda so that it can be familiar and more easily absorbed by the intended demographic and clientele, really.
Sure. Yeah.
I played the Assassin's Creed where it was ancient Greece.
Yes.
And you're running around, you hear people talking, and it's everyone speaking English with a weird, like, Italian, like, voice, really. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like, but Cassandra. It's supposed to sound Greek, but it really sounds like your Mario's running around you. Hippopotamus. So I hear you. And then wasn't there a movie, 13 Warriors, where they started the movie in, with subtitles, and they were speaking the correct dialect, and then eventually Antonio Banderas, I think, learned the language, and it went to English.
Okay.
For the audience, I think.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. I will throw out some highlights if we're on this subject. There are some movies that do it right, but only because the context of the movie allows for it. And one of them was The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise. I don't know if you guys ever seen that. He gets a lot of flack for being a white guy in a movie called The Last Samurai. But if you watch the movie, it's not like he's taking over Japan and he's like supposed to be a Japanese person. He's clearly an American that was like contracted to help a bunch of like Japanese samurai. And he learns from the process to be a better person. And like he gets folded into the ranks, but I don't even think he's the last samurai in the movie. He's just unfortunately the box art poster guy to sell the movie. But there is a last samurai in the movie that is a Japanese person. It's just an unfortunate movie poster. The other one was Ghost in a Shell. I don't know if you know about this, but it was Scarlett Johansson. Yeah. She was portraying a Japanese person whose body was put into a cybernetic body of like a white person. And she still identified as Japanese, could still speak Japanese, but like her body was like a ghost in a shell. Like that's the whole concept of the whole movie. And people were really angry. It's like, why isn't she an Asian person? It's like, she's not even an Asian person in the source material that they're pulling it from. She's just like a beautiful person. And her body is like just a model of a robot that they can put in. So that was interesting too. Those movies weren't worth the flack. It was just people trying to get upset because people like getting upset PAs too.
Yeah.
We ran into a wall. How about we take a break and come back after the show and we can go into Biblical Diet.
Okay. Sounds real good.
Sweet, sweet, sweet.
Welcome. Well, this is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour and WOZO Radio. We're broadcasting from Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be right back after this short break.
It seems to me the species Homo sapiens carries the chutzpah gene. To think they are the purpose of the universe when they only just arrived on the scene. What's even worse, they bear a curse of believing they're the only form of life to never die and go on living somewhere high up in the sky.
Somewhere high up in the sky.
So why don't bees go to heaven and trees go to heaven? Amoeba, krill and fleas go to heaven. It's not surprising that they're not arising, 'cause man created God.
This grain of sand upon an infinite beach had been supporting life for trillions of spins. Then along came humans who started assuming that this was where it begins. So profoundly naive, they began to perceive these primates were the only ones to never die and go on living somewhere high up in the sky.
Somewhere high up in the sky.
So why don't worms go to heaven and germs go to heaven? Spiders, snakes and sperms go to heaven. It's quite expected that they're not resurrected, 'cause man created God.
If man created Zeus
and the god of the sun,
if man created Shiva
and the god of Abraham,
from all of life, why should the only one saved be the
species worst behaved?
Well, that's because that same species, Homo sapiens, carries the chutzpah gene. To think they are the purpose of the universe when they only just arrived on the scene. What's even worse, they bear a curse of believing they're the only form of life to never die and go on living somewhere high up in the sky.
Somewhere high up in the sky.
So why don't whales go to heaven
and snails go to heaven. Orangutans and quail go to heaven. They don't think twice about paradise because man created God. So why don't bees go to heaven and trees go to heaven? Amoeba, krill and fleas go to heaven. It's not surprising that they're not arising because man created God. So why don't worms go to heaven and germs go to heaven? Spiders, snakes and sperms go to heaven. It's quite expected that they're not resurrected because man created God. So why don't bees go to heaven and trees go to heaven? Amoeba, krill.
Welcome back to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's take just a moment to talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002. We're in our 21st year now and have over 1,000 members. We have weekly in-person meetings every Tuesday evening in Knoxville's Old City at Barley's Taproom and Pizzeria. Look for us inside at the high top tables, or if it's pretty outside, out on the deck. If you'd like to join us, go to our website at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. You can also find us on Facebook or meetup.com, or just Google Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to meetup and look for a group in your town. Don't find one.
Start one.
Right. Wombat, where are you going to pick up?
Boudreaux, thank you so much for sharing the fun trip that you have with your family. 13 people all staying together, going from one place to another. That is both an accomplishment and a fun time. I'm just wondering, like, how do you feed that many people complimentary all at once?
Yeah, I mean, it was some of the meals were included, you know, it was part of the hotel, or it was a bed and breakfast, or sometimes we just went to like vendors and got food. So a lot of pushing tables together and that kind of a thing.
Walk into the store. It's like, hey, can you feed 13 people? It's like, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
What's the strategy though? Do you feed them any kind of food, or do you feed them the biblical diet?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know about the biblical diet until this morning.
What? You didn't know about the biblical diet? It's the one way to stay truly with God as you try to match your lean with your cuisine and and feeling, what is it, pristine with God. So there's actually a way to stay completely. So, you know, some religions have diet restrictions, right? This isn't a new thing. But Christianity also has some dietary restrictions. If not, characters in the Bible have had to deal with restrictions on what they can eat and what access to food they had, particularly when they're like going through deserts and stuff. And I say to ourselves, why don't we follow those same guidelines today? Why are there still Christians that are wishy-washy cherry picking what they can eat and what they can't eat? If you do that, in my head, you are only furthering your chances of not saving your soul. So what we could do today is share the guidelines for a proper Christian diet and see how we feel about it, both as non-believers and then maybe even put on our Christian hats and figure out how we feel about it as a Christian. So the first one is your breakfast, right? Every good breakfast, every good day starts with a good breakfast. A biblical breakfast is manna monotony. So you'll start your day with a hearty portion of manna straight from heaven. Don't worry about the variety or taste. Manna is a divine gift that tastes like honey wafers, as said in Exodus 16:31. Warning, consuming manna exclusively may result in breakfast boredom and severe carbohydrate overload. What do you guys think about that?
I mean,
where do you get the manna? It literally falls from heaven?
It does fall from heaven, but it does taste like honey wafers.
Well, I've never seen it fall. I have a dearth of manna here.
Okay. That's true. We may have a hard time making manna, though.
You might starve to death if you eat only manna.
Yeah, the billion-dollar question, though, is why isn't manna something that you can buy from like a Christian organization or a Christian store? Like, why don't they just make manna? We already have wafers, and
that would be blasphemous.
Really?
Only God can make manna.
Oh, but I mean,
I don't know.
if you bless it, like God made the world, I'm part of the world. So if I make something, God made it. Like I'm sure there's a crafty Christian out there who's just like, hey, I made manna. Like it's not that bad.
Okay. Somebody's missing a marketing opportunity, apparently.
Exactly. So here's the next one. Lunch. Every good diet has a good lunch. So lunch is fish frenzy. Enjoy an abundant selection of fish, including those with fins and scales. Leviticus 11:9. You can savor a variety of seafood such as salmon, tuna, or trout, but do not eat shellfish at all costs. Remember, shrimp and lobster are an abomination. To avoid monotony, try different preparations like grilling, baking, or poaching your fish. I actually like this. What do you think?
Seems legit. I usually do fish for dinner instead of lunch, yeah. But okay.
I love seafood.
Okay. Yeah, we didn't say seafood. So Larry, this is how you get on the path to sin. We said fish. They have to have fins and scales.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I like them too, but
shrimp and lobster are an abomination.
Oh, I love my shrimp.
It's always weird to me that God would deliberately make animals that you're not supposed to eat, but also make them delicious at the same time too.
You know, nutritious. It's to test you, Ty. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. But like also make them immediately accessible and like still like these animals are in a weird part of the food chain where they're just eating dead animals. They're doing, I guess, cleanup duty, but they taste really good. They're very easy to catch. Why didn't you make them at least taste bad? It's just a weird situation.
Yeah, a lot of fish eat crustaceans, but then you can eat the fish okay, but you can't eat the crustaceans.
Good point. Ooh, good point. Ooh, I like that. That's even more convoluted than the apple in Eden. So yeah, good point. Yeah.
Since it's Pride Month, we got to point out there's that fast food restaurant that I won't name. If you eat their chicken, you have to hate gay people.
But it's so delicious. Yeah. No, you don't.
Well, it's part of it.
You can just
funding their anti-gay legislation efforts.
You can, right. You can just like a chicken sandwich and try to vote appropriately. Quail Quest for snacks. Listen, if you need a snack, everybody needs a snack. You can try a Quail Quest. What's a Quail Quest? It's to keep your energy levels high. Snack on a quail, such as in be told in Numbers 11, 31 through 32. While the Bible describes the Lord providing quails in abundance for the Israelites in the desert, locating a convenient quail supplier might prove challenging. But hey, it's worth a try, right? My only concern about this is I thought we were going vegan with this diet. And I feel like a lot of people who follow a vegan diet would have some issues by eating fish and quail. And
I think honey too is off the table.
Ooh. Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. So everything we described today is not vegan. Does that mean vegans are abominations?
Oh, yeah. Heathens.
They're at least difficult conversation partners. The reason why I bring that up is the next thing that we're talking about is the vegan option. This is for dinner. It's called Vegan Delights. Prepare a sumptuous feast of legumes, fruits, and vegetables, such as told in Genesis 1:29. Embrace the plant-based lifestyle. Enjoy lentils, chickpeas, and a rainbow of produce. You may experience endless flatulence and dietary imbalance, but remember, it's all part of the divine plan. That's the thing that we always forget, isn't it? That this is always part of a divine plan. There's no such thing as harm to your body if you're listening to God.
What's the biblical basis for not eating honey? I hadn't heard that.
It's not biblical, vegan.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's like they don't drink milk, right?
Because it comes from an animal.
Yeah, and I think it's more about the cruel. Well, I guess I don't fully know, but I think it's about
the factory lifestyle. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Trying to demonstrate sustainability is feasible. I've always respected the intention behind it. And as long as it's not like being proselytized or evangelized at me, you know, I'm fine with, you know, people choosing what they want.
People making their own choices.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Dietary restrictions from a religious basis always just felt like a bizarre set of arbitrary rules that people were following, right? And it's a shame sometimes when I see people like starving and saying like, oh, but you can't eat cows because they're holy, or you can't eat, you know, shellfish, even though you live next to the ocean, so you can feed your kids because that's an abomination food. I would prefer if, like, even though I don't follow veganism, if there was like some sort of better underlying logic to support why people choose to do what they want, and don't force other people to like follow the same set of rules. Anyway, guys, we're going to keep going. Unleavened wonders. This is for dessert after your dinner. Indulge in unleavened bread, Exodus 12:8. Avoid the fluff and yeast and savor the bland cracker-like experience. Get creative by smearing it with a thin layer of honey for a touch of sweetness. Remember, the lack of leavening agents means no fluffy cakes or bread with texture, but it's all in the name of holiness.
Hmm.
Now, the thing is, you can actually buy unleavened bread. Have you guys ever eaten that before?
No,
but I've eaten crackers.
Yeah. That, I mean, in my mind, that's in the same ballpark. Unleavened bread tastes pretty good. It's not puffy, but it's flaky. It fills you up. If it's the only thing I had to eat, I would say, okay, this sucks. But if I'm in the desert, it's an easy way to compact a lot of food in like a small form factor. A lot of the food that I'm seeing is basically food that was around during the time that did not take a lot of effort to prepare and kept you away from potentially food poisoning yourself by eating unknown forms of food. Do you guys see a theme with this at all?
I see, you'd said arbitrary rules. Mm-hmm. And I think looking back at it now, it seems arbitrary, but in my mind, you know, these were probably put in place to keep people from getting sick or dying, the rules on meats and how to cut things and things like that, I think had a rational basis in the sense that they were, you're trying to talk to some followers, so to speak, and get them to do the right thing. If you say God says so, it's a lot easier to get everyone in line.
Yeah, especially pork when you got real problems with pork. But I've never understood the reason why you would stay away from crustaceans.
I think
they're pretty safe food.
So in my mind, crustaceans are the sort of food where once you kill it, you have to eat it, right? Whereas like a fish, you can kill it, keep it cold, and like maybe eat it like two
days. They didn't have cold back then, though.
Salt, right? Preserve it in salt.
So like if a salesman comes to your town, they're like, hey, I have some fresh lobster, but you don't know if it's actually fresh or shrimp, and you don't actually know if it's actually fresh or not. You can eat that. You can be really sick for a long period of time. And that's a drain on your society, right? So like, what's a good way to stop that from happening?
Well, I mean, it could easily have been, they're so handy about handing out rules in the religions. They could easily just say only eat shellfish if you kill it yourself and eat it immediately.
They probably didn't fully understand it though. They probably, they were hearing of people eating shellfish and then getting sick.
Yes.
They didn't do the math. They didn't have data to support it. They just, you know what? Let's just not eat it.
Right. The civil engineering acumen to make intelligent choice. They were just a reactionary, like, what do we do to keep ourselves safe? These people, I've heard that people eat this and get sick. You know,
or maybe you've seen it.
Yeah, we're a tribe going through the desert. We can't afford to lose our blacksmith, our sheep herder. Like, let's just say no shellfish, period. Flat down. Ooh, God says
Write that down. Write that down in the.
Okay. No one can read though. So this is going to be. Let's just make it an oral tradition. I'm sure that'll be fine. No one's going to have an issue with that thousands of years from now. Someone down the road will write it down. But it also strikes me as like, what about pork, right? Pork of like the main three meats that like Americans eat. That's the one that's most difficult to cook. The one that you have to actually properly cook. Why is that the case? I would say pigs don't necessarily live in a clean environment. So like the way someone who can grow pigs may not necessarily be the most sterile butcher to begin with versus like someone who like kills cows and the only thing cows do is like stand in grass in their own manure. For the most part, pigs are always in slop. They don't have good diets. They go wild. They can go feral if you don't maintain them. There's a lot of stuff going on with pigs compared to like a chicken, right? Not only that, but when you have the meat, you have to properly sanitize it by cooking it thoroughly. There's no such thing as rare pork. You wouldn't want to eat that, but you can have a rare steak because the meat fibers are so thick. It's like typically hard for like bacteria to go in. You wouldn't want to have rare poultry, but it's very easy food to cook thoroughly because the fibers are so much more less dense. So
it's smaller too, smaller cuts, right?
Exactly. So the meat goes the heat goes right through, but pork is like dense and potential for a lot of bacterial infections. So I'm not surprised
And parasitic infections.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on that porks are robust enough to live through, but humans mm-hmm. can't if we eat their flesh.
Right.
Goats, not as much of a problem. Sheep, not much of a problem, but definitely pigs. So I'm not surprised that the order on, hey, I heard that a lot of people ate pigs and got sick. Let's just say no pigs. No pigs, no shellfish. It's all the food that's prone to cause people to get sick that we were saying don't eat, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not a coincidence. In my head, that's not even a coincidence. That's just a poor understanding of the time of what was germ theory, right? Yeah. And we didn't really have germ theory until like the 1600s. So like, or that was a bizarre concept for a lot of people, being like, if I wash my hands and I give birth, the baby doesn't die as often.
Right. And the mother, right?
Right. And that took like an extra 400 years for people to be like, maybe they're onto something with this.
Florence Nightingale, right?
Yeah. I don't want to be a sissy washing my hands for no reason. All right. I'm a doctor. Okay. Anyway, in that same vein, there's this really interesting dynamic between drinking water versus drinking alcoholic beverages like mead or wine, because the alcohol that's in those beverages act as a natural disinfectant. So in times when it was very hard to get clean water, if you had access to like alcohol or fermentation capabilities and you could drink wine that had some water content in it, that was like the way how people would stay, unfortunately, hydrated, mm-hmm. which caused a lot of other problems, but we didn't study that very thoroughly. But it brings up the last part of this food diet, which is wine wonderland beverages. End your day with a glass of wine. 1 Timothy 5:23 citation. It's not just for communion. Wine was considered a blessing in biblical times. Be sure to enjoy it responsibly and moderately. Unfortunately, the divine diet does not include cocktails, spirits, or craft beer. Only wine. So say goodbye to your favorite craft brewery. Now that I didn't know. I didn't know beer was not allowed. Okay. Larry, thoughts on that? Larry, are you a wine drinker?
No. No, but I'll drink beer, but not wine very much.
Now, the thing that blows my mind is Greece has a lot of wineries. They have the proper climate to grow grapes and a lot of the long-lasting expertise in that area to be able to do so. But America, except for like Napa Valley or very like other weird locations, don't have access to wine. But all these foods that we're talking about are very specific to the geolocation of where these people are. Like wine, Greece, I can point to it. Like obviously manna was rained on a certain people, and who knows if that even actually exists. But the beans that they're referring to, the idea that there's fish and lobsters and shellfish to talk about, like lobsters and shellfish don't live everywhere on the earth. They only live in very particular, you know, areas that are like next to the sea. And when you think about where the Bible stories get like written, it's typically areas that have like Dead Sea, Black Sea, you know, like right next to it. It's like that weird Persian, Mediterranean, Mesopotamian, really, truly area. I'm not surprised. We were talking about coincidences earlier in the show. And I'm just saying, like, in, similar to how we see different cultures point to the same cross, I'm seeing a culture that's surrounded by these very, very specific kinds of food being also responsible for making these kinds of food or listing these kinds of foods as the only ones you're allowed to eat. And I just find that like, yeah, that makes perfect sense for a group like that to be surrounded by those kinds of foods to make this very specific kind of list. Cause this list wouldn't work in Native America. This list wouldn't work in Alaska. It wouldn't work right. in China, right? They'd be like, what's a lobster? It's an abomination. Don't worry about it. And if you're in Japan and you can't eat oysters, like that's going to be a problem. So it's an interesting concept. All right, guys. Yeah,
we used to brew our own mead at home, actually. My dad would make it. It was pretty cool.
I'm working on making my own pizza dough where I'm making from scratch and I'm adding flour and active yeast. And I am loving working with bacteria again. That's not in the scope of within a laboratory. It's just like, I know how to treat them just right and not shock them and like put them in water and let them ferment and be like, oh, you're so happy, aren't you? I'm going to wait for a couple of generations in this cup to like live. And then I'm going to kill the rest of you guys as I make my pizza dough. But the idea that now that we understand the science, now that we have a better understanding of like how all these things work, it's not necessarily as taboo anymore. And obviously, we can find Christians that eat shellfish. We can find Christians that eat craft, drink craft beer. Is that an evolution of Christianity? Or is it like, is it due to God being more lenient? Or is it due to us just understanding the science and how to better take care of ourselves? Larry, what do you think?
Personally, I think they eat it because they want to, and they pick and choose what they want to do out of the Bible or what, you know, what they don't want to do.
And
the things that they want to do is biblically commanded. And that which they don't is just analogy, allegory.
That's what they did back then. I can do what I want to do.
Right.
That's an interesting idea. Yeah. Bujo, what do you think?
So yeah, that's interesting. You point out, you know, wine's in the Bible, Timothy 5:23, you know, glass of wine a day. We've learned since then that, you know, drinking too much of it can make you kind of a menace to society, possibly. So fast forward to Southern Baptist, and they're like, no drinking whatsoever.
Oh, that's interesting.
And now you have folks going, oh, Southern Baptists, you don't get to drink. Ooh, but Catholicism, I can drink.
All about it.
I have to believe into the transubstantiation.
Right.
Okay. You know, body into bread and all that. So, okay. So, the same point. People are picking, perhaps people are picking and choosing based on their wants and desires. You know, if you want to, you know, enjoy a beverage and this religion doesn't allow for it, you know, flip through the Rolodex and find one that does.
Eric, you have an interesting point. It sounds like you're saying Christianity has evolved. And the thing about evolution is it's not always to a very specific target. It's just bifurcations. Mm-hmm. And whatever gets lucky, gets lucky.
Well
said. The Baptists say no alcohol. And the Catholics say alcohol all the time. It's literally the blood of our Savior. Mm-hmm. And that just spreads out and will continue to bifurcate until we figure out who was right and who was wrong. Maybe one day wine becomes poisonous and only the Baptists survive. And that's the next generation of worldwide Christianity. But my thing is there not room for, along one of these evolutionary pathways, a culture of religion that understands, you know, they didn't understand the science back then. That's why it was disallowed. Because now we know how to properly cook food. Now we know how to properly balance a diet. Now we know how to better portion control so we don't become ornery or drunk or stuff like that. Is there not room for that kind of perspective? Larry, what do you think?
Well, theoretically, they got their dietary restrictions directly from God. Who would know how to fix food if he knows everything?
Now, I'm putting my question down, but wouldn't that be a terrible cost for God to be like, listen, I got to explain biochemistry to you guys. I got to explain, like, most
of it's just three words, cook your food, you know, three words. He doesn't have to explain all that stuff. It's, remember, these are dictates.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands. Right.
Don't eat this. Say. Also, the words, though.
Yeah. Well,
don't eat that. Even simple.
Yeah, but I'm hungry. My kids are starving. You
know, but that's back to your point, Ty, that, you know, some of these things were passed on orally. Mm. Right. And again, they didn't understand much about, you know, germ theory and food safety. And they're passing on these things that, like you said, help keep people alive, right?
Right.
And they're getting passed on, and then finally someone's like writing them down.
Right.
And then, you know, it's this long game of telephone where you say something to someone and they say it's someone else, and eventually it gets written down and translated and that. And then you got some Southern Baptist looking at the book, reading it, and then they're going to put their own interpretation on. You know, they said this, but the wine was really for this, and we'll just get rid of it because it's causing problems.
Well, sure. Look at Mormonism, all the restrictions they have and all the ones that they got rid of.
Yeah. I'm going to poke at us too, because I feel like even atheists have a problem where they pass on tradition despite the fact that they know there's better science out there, yet they stick to the culture. And I'm throwing this out here. It's going to be something that you'll smirk and laugh at, but it makes a lot of sense. Americans use toilet paper. There is no reason to continue to be using toilet paper when the whole world, aside from America, knows that bidets are substantially more sanitary, efficient at cleaning, and less wasteful. because it's just water. It's water that cleans your, if you get mud on your hands, you're not going to take a dry, rigid piece of paper, wipe your hand and be like, my hands are clean now. And you just go on with the rest of your day. You're going to wash your hands with water and rinse it. And maybe you'll use a smaller amount of paper to dry it, but that's basically it. We have bidets that we can install in our toilets now that are available to us on Amazon for like $20. We had a pandemic that taught us that toilet paper is actually a very valuable commodity. And when you don't have it, it's almost enough to shut down your home. Unless if you have a reusable, sustainable option, which is a bidet, which I've installed before even COVID happened. But when you try to sell the idea to Americans, even atheist Americans who love science, it's like, yeah, I don't know. That's too European, or that's not sanitary or anything like that. So what's your excuses to people who don't have bidets who both love science?
I have small children, or, you know, that would be a hot mess. But no, you're, I think it's a paradigm kind of thing. You're just something you're used to, and it's different. Because I'll admit, I was so happy to come home last night and flush toilet paper, because I spent the last 8 days pooping in bathrooms with trash cans in them, and you could not throw your toilet paper down the toilet. The plumbing just wasn't good enough.
Right.
Actually, bidets would be a fantastic revolution in southern Mexico and in Mexico City, because their plumbing can't handle the toilet paper. So everyone just throws them in a trash can in the bathroom. It's
in the bathroom.
That adds all kinds of sanitation, other things. And
right.
So, yeah. I should get on Amazon.
Larry, what's your excuse?
What, for not using a bidet?
Yeah. As a person who loves science, understands cleanliness, understands sanitary, and spent the last 50 minutes chastising Christians for not doing the best for society and for the sake of science, and stop listening to tired tradition.
Why don't you have a bidet? We had this conversation all of that before. Time while you were talking to think of an excuse and haven't come up with one.
Exactly. So I'm not saying it's up to human nature. I'm just saying we can pick on Christians in the show, but we also pick on atheists too. Like, you guys, we are susceptible to the same follies that Christians can be, because we're both humans. And my idea is science is a tool designed not just for Christianity, not just for atheists, not just for men or women. It helps everybody. And the more we better understand it, the more we can immediately improve our lives. I was very iffy on the whole bidet situation. I thought it was bizarre. Then I had I don't know if I can say this on the radio, a clean back end. Is that the first way to say it? It is a substantially different sensation than using toilet paper. Like, it's night and day. To smear until you don't see a smear is such an archaic way of cleaning what is like one of the most dirtiest things possible, compared to just pushing a button and being like, okay, it's clean now, let me just dry it. It's like, immediately, sensation wise, it's night and day difference. I can't proselytize it to people. I won't go, you know, the aggressive route. I'm just saying it's an option that's there, it's available to you. And if you have hemorrhoids, or if you have any sort of weird, you know, altercations that can come from not having access to toilet paper, or your plumbing being backed up, if you live out of
this, is me constant really trying to think of a good segue.
it's the most sustainable thing that you can do. I'm not saying be a vegan. I'm saying you should use water to clean waste. It's the most obvious thing that you should do. It's why we take showers and not just wipe ourselves with A4 binder paper. Like, we wash ourselves with water.
So clean what's
yourself. It's good.
So what's the best paper, biblically approved food that you can eat so that you don't need a toilet paper?
I would say the legume option. You need fiber. You need to be able to push through things with your intestines. Yeah. But anyway, That is the show. Thank you guys so much. Sorry for the small putting you guys on the hot seat. But recommended. It's only a $20 add-on to any toilet. There's a whole bunch of different options for hot and water controls. It takes 5 minutes to install yourself. And even if
you're send me a link in the chat.
You're never too old. You're never too young. It's something that everyone can have. If you go to Japan, the toilets they have there are insane, and they're for the whole families. When I was in Sweden, they had heated seats. They had toilets to talk to you. They had ones that play white noise to keep you from being self-conscious around the other people that you might be using the bathroom with around. Yeah. It was amazing. Like, our toilet technology is really, really poor in the US, and we need to be able to recognize that and look at the science and improve upon it. It's good for everybody. And same thing with your diet. Look at the science, take care of yourself at the end of the day, and don't let tradition or old rules dictate what you think is acceptable or what you're capable of doing. Boudreaux, what would you recommend we check out before next week?
Can I just throw out that other little Mexican thing? We did go through a Mayan church that resisted some of the Catholic influences.
Nice. Good for them.
Yeah. However, one of their things was if you had a sick loved one that was, you know, ill, you could bring in, of course, you bring in all kinds of things to give to the gods, flowers and food and things, but a live chicken you could sacrifice.
Ooh.
And they did it right there in the church. And my daughter was so uncomfortable in there. She had to run out. They would kill the chicken, behead the chicken right there in the church, which was filled with pine needles on the floor and candles everywhere. I was scared to death. I didn't see a fire.
I'm knocking over one thing.
Yeah. There were dogs.
How thick were the pine needles on the floor?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, was it a single layer or was it 3 inches?
No, it's a single layer.
Speaking of divine protection, right?
Right. Yeah. So then they would take the chicken home and bury it, and the chicken would soak up all of the
sins,
the disease, and the person you wanted, they loved, would heal. And I just couldn't help think, looking around, these people are poor. They can't afford to take one of their healthy chickens and give it and just bury it,
right?
For magic reasons. Sure. And it shook my head. And I know they're preserving the culture, and I appreciate it. And our guide was really cool and also agnostic. Nice. So because we had some conversations, and he kind of agreed. But anyway, sorry, long winded. But I wanted to share that piece too. Just sad to me to see a church again taking money from poor people for magical reasons.
It breaks my heart to know that that's also a story that has parallels in Christianity with people burning goats, because they're supposed to burn a goat. It hurts my heart to know that toilet paper companies are still making money off of dumbfounded Americans who don't know that water is a better way to clean between their legs. I have the same sympathy on all levels for the exact same reason. Where's your contradiction? Yeah. Larry, go on ahead.
Well, I'd like to remind everybody that if they're having trouble leaving religious beliefs behind, then you can get help from recovering from religion at recoveringfromreligion.org. Mm. My content can be found at digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click on the blog button for a radio show archives, atheist songs, and many articles on the subject. You can find my book, Atheism, What's It All About, on Amazon, and my YouTube channel handle is @Doubter5. Remember, everybody's going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life. We'll see you next Wednesday night at 7 o'clock here on WOZO Radio. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.